At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. Today we have two of our pharmacists around the table who are passionate about reducing stress, and we are going to talk about how we handle stress at work and the workplace. And so I'm going to have them introduce themselves to start. So we have Nicole. So Nicole, why don't you give us a little bit of 30 seconds about you?
Yeah. So I am Nicole Grams. I'm a pharmacist in Wisconsin. I love talking to patients about stress and anxiety and working everything out to make life just enjoyable or getting closer to there.
Yes. Awesome. And Maria?
Hi, my name is Maria Faruqi and I live in Texas and I'm a mom of two kids. I'm a pharmacist here. And I love to talk to people about holistic lifestyle changes because I think there's so much information out there that we're not privy to. And I love sharing and passing the knowledge. And talking about stress management is quite dear to me because I think I could have benefited from this a long time ago.
Yes, we probably all could have, right?
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the things you don't learn until you're like past the point where you need to learn them 10 years ago, for sure. So yeah, that's why we're here talking about it today. And interestingly enough that the U.S. Surgeon General released a new framework for mental health and well-being in the workplace. And this was actually released last October. But there's so much in this generation that, you know, there's great resignation. There's also like post-COVID changed how we live and work and the environments in which we work. And so this whole generational movement, obviously there needs to be some like addressing that, I guess, from the government organizations. And so that's probably where some of this came from. But really the goal, the Surgeon General says, a healthy workplace is a foundation for thriving organizations and healthier communities. And this is absolutely true. If you're not thriving at work, you're not going to be thriving in your home life. You're not going to be thriving in your community and your parenting and how you're engaging your neighbors. If work has really got you so stressed out and tied up and you're spending all of your mental energy on how you handle that. And so employers really have an opportunity to invest in mental health and the well-being of their workplace. And so much of that comes from work-life balance, things we're going to talk about, but also how we manage people, how we set expectations, how we engage each other. So there's lots of cool things we can dig into. But the COVID-19 pandemic, actually, there are some recent surveys post-pandemic, and one of them was that 76% of U.S. workers in 2021 reported at least one symptom of mental health condition, whether that was anxiety or depression, and an increase of 17%, which is an increase in 2 years. So it's like, oh my goodness, 76% of people? Like, that's like mind-boggling to me. I mean, certainly only the people that took the survey, but still. And then 81% of workers reported that they would be looking for workplaces that support mental health in the future. And so certainly that's something that companies that are trying to retain employees have to be thinking about. And then 84% of respondents report at least one workplace factor that had a negative impact on their mental health. So much to unpack here, but they sort of came up with this 5 essentials for workplace mental health and well-being to really help organizations develop and come up with policies and procedures. Our team is active working with employers and trying to support this from a not just mental health, but physical health and helping people thrive in that workplace. So some of the things that we're going to get into, we're going to talk about protection from harm, connection to community, the work-life harmony, mattering at work, and then also opportunities for growth. So I'm going to pass it off to Maria to sort of dig into that first one, the protection from harm.
Yeah, thank you, Melody. So I think protection from harm is so important. It's just like creating the conditions for physical and psychological safety at work. And that's really a critical foundation for making sure our mental health and well-being is taken care of in the workplace. It's one thing to complain about that I'm not getting the right amount of rest at work, I'm not getting the right amount of break times, or my mental health is not being safeguarded. But I think it's important for us to demand for this and ask our employers and our companies, hey, I feel like I'm not getting enough break time. I feel like this is being sacrificed. I need more physical safety. I'm not feeling safe. And you know, also for me especially, this is quite important, is having that component of diversity and inclusion in my workplace where my personal accommodations are being understood and being provided. So essentially, that's just like creating a great environment for where I'm feeling psychologically safe and I'm feeling like, okay, I'm heard, I'm seen, I'm valued, and I feel safe at this workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And too, like a work schedule that enables you to rest when you're off work too is super important
being
protected and having a good immune system and all the things we talk about. We go back to the foundation of sleep as being vital. And if you're only getting 3 to 4 hours of sleep or even 5 hours of sleep, you're at risk for lots of different chronic diseases. So making sure that you have the ability to have that time off with your family, but also get that 8 hours of sleep that your body needs is super important.
Yeah. So I remember as a young mom, and I'd taken a 5-year maternity break and then went back to work. And I was clearly a mother of a 5-year-old and then a 12-year-old. And I was stressed at work and I didn't recognize those stresses. I didn't recognize work as a stress. And I would come home feeling irritable, snappy. I wasn't very great with my family, I would say, when I would come from work. I didn't sleep well. I had headaches. I had digestive issues. That would attribute it to other things like, oh, I ate something wrong, my digestive issue, but I wouldn't think of stress. I'm irritable because someone, some XYZ did something, right? It wasn't because of me and my stress, and my resiliency was quite low. Because remember, as mothers, we are also have different hats on, right?
Sure.
So we are a mom, we are a wife, we are a daughter, then you are working and you're trying to prove yourself to at work, especially coming from a long hiatus. So I was clearly stressed and I didn't notice the signs. And I don't think anyone could have told me, hey, look, these are the signs. I think you're stressed at work. I think that had to come within me and acknowledge from within me. Okay, I have all these things going on. I'm sure not everyone is out here to get me. Something that I need to look at and evaluate within myself.
Sure.
And so, yeah, so I think it's important for us to look for those signs.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Picking up off of that a little bit, I also didn't realize how stressed I was at work. So I can definitely relate to like bringing things home. But I think mine sort of manifested in a, oh no, I can handle stress. I just expect so much more out of my spouse to do everything that I expect him to do for me and make sure I'm getting enough hugs and make sure I'm being taken care of. Like, it wasn't fair for me to expect that of him when he was not getting that from me either. And it was definitely me bringing it home and not realizing it. So it can definitely affect relationships in the household and elsewhere too, friendships and everything.
Because you tend to bring stress from work to home. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's a good segue to the community and connection, because fostering that social interaction and relationships in the workplace, if you don't have those positive relationships, you're going to bring home that negativity, right? That people are experiencing. It's crazy, like thinking about from the pharmacist perspective, like a lot of us worked at one point in our career in a busy community pharmacy, and it was game changer if you walked in and you were doing, say you were doing 500 prescriptions for the day, which is a pretty good amount in 10 hours or so. And you've got a positive staff that's like, let's do this. Let's be able to encourage each other, step in when someone takes a break. Oh, I'll take this over. I'll do this without being asked. Complete to, you've got the opposite situation. You're doing the same number of prescriptions and you've got negative Nancys all day that hate their job and that are talking behind each other's back. Like, it just changes like the whole day. You are doing the same work. You're getting the same job done, but it just completely changes how it impacts you and your stress and also what you take home to your family. So having those community foster and those relationships of people that you can trust at work is important too. And I think as I've become a business owner, it's a little different in how you have to like form trust with people than if you're just like on that, like I'm your colleague sort of trust level. So it's interesting, but I think cultivating, figuring out how to build trust in those relationships and fostering the teamwork, collaboration, figuring out how everyone can succeed at something and acknowledging like that if you are the manager or the owner of a business, like how do you give back to your employees to show them that they're part of this community and that this, whatever it is, your business or your department would not be what it is without one of those people? Because I think that's a hard thing to do because I don't know. I go back to sort of the like love languages. There's a book called The Five Love Languages, but it has its place in relationships with other people, with your children, with your spouse. But everyone like receives, like they feel like that good dopamine hit feeling like in a different way. Some people, like Nicole said, hugs, like that doesn't bother me as much if I'm not getting hugs. Although like I got plenty of hugs right now from my 6-year-old boy. He'll give me hugs all day. But mine is words of affirmation. So when I got an email yesterday from a student that was on my rotation that matched, like thanking me for my investment in him and all this stuff, that was like, oh my goodness, I'm so thankful that you took the time to say this. But I think as like managers, even coworkers, like telling your coworker, hey, like, I really appreciate that you did this for me. But sometimes you just sort of have to figure out what that person's, how that person receives love. Is it through those words of affirmation? Is it through, I brought you coffee this morning, just wanted to say thank you? Is it some other way that you can like be on, even if your workplace maybe is not the ideal setting for you right this second, like how can you as an individual contribute to improving that by fostering those relationships with people around you?
Yeah. And I think sometimes it takes workplace appropriate vulnerability, but like being willing to say things that are meaningful to you that might, you have to risk the rejection in there. And I think what you were kind of saying with like, whether you're a manager or a boss or that sort of thing, like holding space for your employees to be able to open up to you in mm-hmm. ways that they're frustrated without them feeling attacked.
Yep.
I think is it kind of goes into protection from harm as well of the like, can I approach my superiors with information that is frustrating to me without fearing for my own job?
Sure.
Because I think that's super common and I've experienced that myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as the manager or the like leader, sometimes it's hard to hear those things. So you have to like step back and say, okay, well, obviously something is broken here. How do I fix it? Don't take it personally. And, you know, figure out how you can all like work together to like make those improvements.
I started using a little trick with myself of the like, how is what they're saying the truth? Instead of like trying to be defensive and trying to like, whether it's your boss coming to you or you going to your boss, like in what way is what they're saying true? Let's hear that part of it first and then wait and pause and think about it and respond instead of like the snap judgment and like the attack back.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's something that like comes with wisdom sometimes and like growth, that it's not always going to be there. Like at the beginning of your career, we all made those mistakes where we snapped back about something and this is why we're doing this, but that's not where we want to be, right? We want to be in a place that we can recognize that we're always needing to be in this change mode. And I think that's hard for people. Like they want to set something up and like do something. Okay, this is how we do it. This is what works. But so much about the environment, people we're selling our services to, whether it's a physical product or not, like everything around us is changing. So we always have to be responding to those changes. So anything else you guys want to say about teamwork, collaboration, relationship in the workplace?
I think it's also about building trust with your team members and your manager and your employer. And so when they give you feedback, you're also receptive to taking that feedback. And just what you said, just like it comes with maturity and wisdom, right? Is there like, and what Nicole said, is there some truth to it, right? And it does require reflection. You may not agree with it at the time you're receiving the feedback, but you have to sometimes go and ponder and think about it and ruminate. It's like, okay, maybe, yeah, maybe they're correct. Maybe that's right. Yesterday, I received a feedback, which I wouldn't have liked 20 years ago. But now it's like, okay, I see what they're coming from. I see the perspective. Any of these the things I can do perhaps to change.
Yeah.
And that really is relieving, actually. It doesn't burden me with like fighting it.
Yeah.
Right. I accept it and I just move along with it. Right.
Yeah.
Because I haven't lost my job. I still have it. It just hasn't burdened me with it. It's just like, okay, I just got something I can work on and I will just flow with it and I'll see how it works in a few months' time if I'm receptive to it. And it was relieving for me because it didn't feel like I was burdened and I was angry and I was upset and I carried on and I didn't sleep.
One thing that I also think in this space post-COVID with more people working remotely is like the need for like being present with each other in the same space, having like a retreat. Our team goes on a retreat now once a year to like connect with each other in the same space, sitting next to each other, able to give those hugs. But even like my husband's company, he works for Automatic, which is a company that does a lot of things online, runs WordPress.com and Jetpack and like all these tools that people use to make websites. And so everyone in their company works from their home. And I mean, some people probably rent office space and things like that for co-working spaces, but majority of people are not physically in place place with their colleagues that they're working with every day, but they make a point to have, an instance the inception of the company, they've had like what they call meetups. And so their team will go meet in a physical location for 3 to 4 days, depending on what type of team they're on. They might do that twice a year and then a big meetup later on in the year. But it is like why people like stay connected to this company is one of the reasons, but they also have a good balance, work-life balance and vacation policy and things like that. But yeah, just making sure people like can have that in-person relationship, because we all know like telehealth is amazing. It gives people access to the care that maybe they couldn't have before. But physical, like we are designed to be in community and have that physical presence with people. And so I think if you're completely a telework type environment, you're going to miss out on some of that fostering relationships and teamwork with people if you don't ever have that point where you gather. All right. Well, that is a good segue also to the work-life harmony. So the professional and personal roles and how we take autonomy over our work and then also making our schedules flexible. I will say, like, if I'm looking for or creating a job, a flexibility is always like at my top of my list, like even over pay or vacation time or something like that. The ability to have autonomy and how you're spending your time to me is one of the most important things for myself and why I chose to work for myself, because I wasn't necessarily finding that, you know, in the last couple of years. But what do you guys think about how that like maybe alleviates stress or impacts like the stress in your workplace?
There was something that I heard the other day that I was like, it made me pause, because it was like talking about micromanaging and bosses like mm-hmm. always hovering and doing all the things, which is, I think what you're talking about mm-hmm. here is like, give me space to do my job, right? Yeah. It was something to the effect of micromanaging is getting your power from telling everybody that you can do it better than them.
Right.
And that was like, holy cow. How much have I micromanaged in my life? And like, oh, no, I mean, even at home with my spouse, like, oh, no, I can do it better than you. Let me show you exactly how to do it. So, you right. know, how, like it, there's a difference between that and like teaching them.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a message for bosses to like maybe take a step back when you're trying to micromanage everything yeah. and you don't always notice it right away. And again, it comes with time and experience mm-hmm. and maybe people have to tell you what you're doing, but.
Right. Yeah. It probably depends on the employee's experience. It almost is like akin to our job as parents. For those of us who have kids, like you're guiding them, but you can't do everything for them. It's sort of like the helicopter parent analogy. You can't be there all the time. When I was faculty, had a parent of like a college student emailing me about the college students like not showing to class or wanting to know more about his grades. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like the college student hasn't even come and asked me questions about his grades. Those kinds of things, like we just have to like sort of say, hey, this is what I'm asking you to do. And this is what we, the end product that we need. How you get there and how you spend your time getting there is leaving it up to the employee or in the parent situation, the child, like figuring out that process. They're going to learn along the way too, more if they're like trying to discover it themselves. And most people don't want that person saying, you have to spend this hour doing this and this hour to this hour doing this. It's mm. hard, I think, again, back to the like telework environment is that in some ways, like employers may have lost a little bit of control with how people are spending their time because now they're at home, there's distractions. But then again, you've got other employees that are doing more work at home because they have less distractions, less people knocking on the door and coming to visit. And I know I get more work done at home than when I'm in an office where people are stopping by for the casual chat. So there's balance to that too, but the autonomy piece is huge for a lot of people.
And what I liked about is in the Surgeon General's report, with respect to work-life harmony, is having the ability to have boundaries between work and non-work time. And that's, I think sometimes that gets blurred, especially with our cell phones, mm-hmm. right? Because there's a lot of emailing and we have these like team chats, team apps, right? Like we have Slack, etc. And so like, oh, this is one message while you're having dinner. Oh, just let me just quickly yeah. respond to her. And then something else follows. And then you realize, okay, I've kind of mixed my work time with my dinner time right now, right? And so those lines can get easily blurred, and it's so easy to do that. I've fallen into the trap myself several times, and it is a continuous reminder. I think everything we do in life is a continuous reminder. It's this intention setting every day. Today, I'm going to do better. I might not 100% do it, but I might do better in differentiating my family from work and adhere to that, right? And I feel like, I mean, having been raised in Europe as well as here, our office hours tend to become 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Even though technically work finishes at 5, we tend to just like extend it a little bit longer because we've got nothing else to do. And I usually tell my clients, like, it's very important to have a hobby or a passion or something else on the side. So something else is consuming your energy. Something else is taking your mind away. No, I can't do this because I have to go fishing with my son. No, I can't do this because I play baseball. You have something going, oh, I'm coaching soccer. So there's something that we have. And so it's easy to say, I need to have a clear boundary between work and my family life. But we also have to implement certain things, certain factors that allow us to do that, right? Like maybe putting timers on your phone, right? After 8 p.m., I don't go into certain apps. We can have notifications like that on our phone. Certain kind of settings, we can do that. Or just telling the family, like, okay, from 8 p.m., I'm going to sit with you guys, right? I'm going to do this.
Putting the family time or the date night or the date afternoon, like on the calendar and blocking that out is important.
Yeah, I think that's a good example of holding boundaries for yourself. And I think email is a good example for many people in the workplace, in the office, and whatever. Like, you're responding to emails while you're sitting and watching TV at night. Like, I don't understand why that's okay. It's important to hold those boundaries for yourself, especially around email. It can be as simple as I respond to emails between this time and this time. Like, maybe just after lunch and then right before I leave for the day. And if you need me for something outside of that, contact me in this way. And you can have an autoresponder on your email to say, like, if this is more urgent than responding during these hours, please contact me in this other way. Right? So you can have those boundaries and allow people to problem solve for themselves sometimes and trust that things are going to get done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, also respecting that other people have different work hours. So if you get an email at 10 p.m., like, it does not mean you have to respond. It means that that was the time where that person
Correct.
Had time to respond. Like, one time last year, I had the only chunk of time I had in a weekend was like from 8 to 10 p.m. on a Saturday night where I was like reviewing things and like giving feedback. And I responded to that time. And the person on the other end got so upset about that I was emailing at this time to her. And I'm like, it shouldn't matter what time you receive it. Like, you can still have the choice as the person separating your boundaries to decide like when you're going to respond to that. And especially for me, because I have some odd work hours just with like managing family life and work life. And sometimes I am up later than I probably should, but in the afternoon I'm spending time with my kids. So you just have to figure out what works for you and your balance, but respect that somebody else's might be different than yours.
And I think that might be a good conversation to have with other people in your workplace.
Yeah,
And
for
again,
sure.
whether that's your boss or not, as to what expectations are. Like, do you expect me to respond to this email that you sent at 10:30 at night? Like, because no.
No, I don't. Actually, it was just when I hit the
Right?
send
Just
button.
setting.
And now there's like constant bombardment of emails from marketing things and all kinds of stuff. It is challenging sometimes to like, I'm a inbox, like, I got to get rid of that notification that there's like something in there. And it's hard for me to, I don't know if you've seen that meme where like someone's got like 10,500 like emails and then the other person, like, there's no notifications. I'm like the no notification person. Like, even if there's 10,000 emails in the inbox, there can't be any notifications. So figuring out how your team works and how everybody else is super helpful. But I know, Nicole, you wanted to talk about the mattering at work and like how people feel the culture of recognition, gratitude, and feel like their importance at work. So I'll let you dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, so it's definitely more than, hey, let's have a pizza party once a month, right? Those are nice, but it's not really showing real appreciation for your employees. Asking what would be helpful is one of the best things you can do, and being willing to hear responses that you might not want to hear. But I think this is where, I don't know if you've heard of quiet quitting. The concept is that we're expected in the workplace to do six different people's jobs, right? Like, if we're a good employee, then we get more and more and more piled on us. So they're like, quiet quitting is more like, I'm doing what's in my job requirement and what it is stated that I am supposed to do, and I'm not doing anything else. And I'm going to spend the rest of my time however I want because I'm not doing somebody else's job when I'm not getting paid for that, right? I think there's a balance between wanting, well, this might talk more about it in the opportunities for growth thing. I'm not saying that it's the best idea to only do your job specifically that and like blatantly refuse to do anything else. Like, obviously, we want to have an environment of helping each other and like growing together and opportunities for promotions and things like that. but also like being recognized is probably one of the biggest things that is overlooked. Mm-hmm. I know I was told when I became a manager, this is a thankless job. You'll be doing it amazingly and you'll know because nobody's saying anything.
Wow.
Because you'll only hear things that are negative coming up to you. I'm like, oh, that's great.
I feel like that's sort of like the faculty thing. So when we get those positive things, we're like, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, it's how can you recognize other people around you and how can you express that that's what you need from yourself, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, understanding like, again, how someone feels gratitude and, you know, what, again, like there's a whole like movement right now out in the pharmacy world, like hashtag pizza is not working because so many employers are trying to say, here's your pizza. Like we're taking care of you. We're going to provide you dinner. And it's like, okay, one, this is not like dinner. And two, like that doesn't fix the fact that people are drowning in their job and stressed and physically like ill because of the work expectations. So yeah, finding a way to make sure people have the ability to balance and be able to make that living wage, but also to be able to build that culture where you can provide recognition for things that maybe we forget to talk about. I mean, even you're the employee and you have a manager that's doing a good job, like take a moment to say, hey, like, I really appreciate that you've done this for us. And whether it's just a handwritten note, you don't even have to buy anything, but yeah, just be able to say a note, or sometimes it's hard to say those things face to face. I'm an emotional person. So sometimes if I have something to say like that, I'll be like crying about it, even though it's like a good thing. So I might have to write that note so I can have my tears before I would turn it in. But yeah, so figuring out how you thank people. And I think even beyond work, like how do we thank the people in our lives that are like keeping everything afloat, whether it's your spouse or your neighbors, like the village of people that are helping with your kids. And those things are super important because people just have to feel like what they do matter, no matter where they're doing it mm-hmm. or where they're plugging in. Yeah. And then the last part of the conversation, at least in the Surgeon General's report, was opportunities for growth. So how organizations can create more opportunities for workers to accomplish their goals based on their skills and growth. So some of those things might include offering quality training programs and education, fostering opportunities for advancement, but also that relevant reciprocal feedback that we've been talking about. So being able to take those feedback things and reciprocate between the employee and the manager, even just colleagues, and be able to take that and not feel offended by those things. I think sometimes we have to do some internal work, sort of like we talked about before, of like, okay, how am I receiving this? Like, what does this mean about me if I just like completely shut down this idea that we're all like, we've taught to have like pride in things sometimes, but sometimes we have to like put that aside and say, okay, maybe there is something I can do to improve this situation. Anything else you guys want to
add? Yeah, especially when you're talking about stress at workplace, I think we should also remind ourselves that sometimes stress is good.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, at least, it gets work done.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you feel about that. Right. Sometimes I need that stress. I need that weight on me to get my deadline met.
Yes. The procrastination. And
the procrastination. Yeah. So sometimes when I know if I get this work done, there is another next step for me. There's mm-hmm. something, a much more higher purpose for me. Right.
Yeah.
And for me, in that context, if there's an opportunity for growth, stress is okay for me.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if that made sense. You're right. You know, if I know that I'm going to get some kind of a training to become more better at certain something, or more education, more like maybe I have to give up my weekend with my family to go to a conference, some remote area, I'm okay with that kind of stress of packing up my bags, going and like eating hotel food, staying in a hotel. Mm-hmm. That is okay for me. And spending like eight to 9 hours sitting in a conference, that is okay for me because I am getting something out of it. I am accomplishing something. Because now we are coming into a more of an online mode, conferences and stuff, mm-hmm. it's becoming more easier for us, for opportunities for growth. And right this weekend, I'm going to be on a neuroscience and yoga conference. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. And it's a weekend I'm willing to give up, and because there is some tunnel at the end. And having that accomplishment done, it's just such a great feeling to feel, great feeling to have that, yes, I'm growing, I'm doing something better, I am launching a new product, or I am launching a new program or a new service. And to me, that helps reduce stress.
I just wanted to point out that the stress that you're talking about, while it is very good, it's something that resolves after a certain point. And I think the difference between that and the stress that a lot of people are experiencing on top of another thing that's causing that much stress, we're looking for these stressors to get resolved, to have the calm in between them without stacking everything up on top of each other. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I completely agree that certainly deadlines and stressors like that are good for me.
Yes.
And also, it's important to make sure that you can balance your nervous system in between those active moments.
Yeah, we're not designed to be running from the bear all the time, just in spurts of like, oh, we got to run and do this thing and then come back. And yeah, so Nicole, along those lines, what would you say to someone who's in the situation where they are mounting stress all the time? It's impacting their home life, even their performance at work. Like, how do they get out of that?
It can be really hard. I'll start with that. Allowing yourself to be in a space where it's hard and like not resisting that, as odd as it might sound, it's worse when you try to think that you shouldn't be there at certain points. And obviously there's some nuance to that, but how much can you stop fighting reality in different parts and what actually matters? And like really taking some time to think critically about what you want to get out of each thing. Because I was in a circumstance where like, it was honestly best for me to leave the job. And I started looking for opportunities elsewhere because I had so many stories built up in my head and so much evidence against all the things there. I just didn't feel comfortable. And I know that other people have been in that space where like, you can't trust your boss. Can you talk to this person? Are they going to report back to them? And it's just this like catty back and forth toxic work environment that I probably was contributing to because I didn't know any better at the time. But also like, what's most important for you? And there are other opportunities out there, because I think at that time, I was also convinced that I didn't have skills that were translatable to other positions or other work environments, which is completely not true at all. It was just a story that I told myself to stay in the environment that I thought was familiar. And familiar was still terrible, but it was better than unfamiliar new, right? But yeah, really assessing what's important for you and like, what can you let go of? Or like, I mean, it's going to vary from person to person and situation to situation, but like, how can you speak up for yourself in ways that matter? How can you, you know, prioritize what's actually important for you in your life?
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that, Maria?
Yeah, so I think acknowledging stress is super important, and being able to label and point that these are the factors that are causing stress, which I think some people fail to do that, and I think that's super important. And then establishing boundaries, and boundary setting, I don't think has been taught well in our generation, to tell you the truth. And so I think we learn that as we get older. I know what boundary setting means. Okay, I should be able to say no. I can say no. Oh, I can say yes. Having those simple understanding that it's okay that you can't make everyone happy, and this is what you plan to do today, and having that boundary setting is super important. And then taking time to just relax, just do nothing. I'm a kind of a person, or what I was kind of a person, Melody, where if there was a free slot in my calendar, I thought I had to fill it with something. I couldn't keep it empty. I don't know if you ever experienced that feeling. It's like, oh, yes, every I'm day. Available. Yes. You know, and being able to say, I have nothing to do that day, and it's okay, I have nothing to do. And the feeling the next day that you have when you do nothing is just so much more amazing, and you feel so much more productive.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, these are the things that I've been working on. I'm not going to say that I'm perfect. I have mastered the art of relaxation. I'm nowhere near there, but I'm still learning to practice my boundaries. I'm still learning to say, it's okay, I can't do it. Or no, I have to keep the slot empty. And I have nothing to do. Yes, I have nothing to do. I'm going to keep it empty. So I'm learning all those things.
Yeah, sometimes it's helpful to say something like, I respect myself enough to have downtime. The guilt that can come from those of us who grew up with a, like, if you're sitting down, you're being lazy mentality. It's okay for me to rest my body, even if it's in the middle of the workday at my office and I just have a half an hour before my next meeting starts. I'm just going to sit. Maybe I'll read a book. I mean, within reason. Obviously, we don't want to be taking
stealing time from your
stretches
employer.
Of time or be productive otherwise. But yeah, I respect myself enough to rest. I respect myself enough to speak up. I respect myself enough to take care of myself.
Yeah.
I often catch myself, Nicole, when I see my kids doing nothing. Like, have you done your laundry? Have you done this? Have you done that? And I'm saying to myself, why am I doing this? Can they just not sit? Yeah. Can they not sit and do nothing when I'm trying to practice that myself? So I thought it was a more of an immigrant mindset, but I guess everyone has it.
No. I mean, I think like from a, you know, my parent, I felt the same way. I think like, oh, if you're not doing something, there's a lot of TV like growing up. And that obviously that's not really resting, like watching TV or watching something. It is in a way you're like sitting, not really thinking the same way that you would. But I do feel like there was always the need to like fill the schedule, or at least I always feel the need to fill the schedule. Although now I don't know that I actually have like a place in the schedule that's empty to fill with my current life. But that's another thing to reevaluate with stress. Like, okay, are you doing too much? That you need to back off on those obligations too. Yeah, well, this is awesome discussion. I think we also offer, Farm to Table has a stress solution. So we did a conference a couple years ago, actually pre-COVID, I think, that we, or maybe not, no, it was 2021. So it was post-COVID, but we had a whole day of speakers on stress and how it impacts your health and ways to mitigate, and not necessarily mitigate, because we're not going to get stressors out of our life. Like, we're going to have stress. It's just how we respond to it. And so we talk a lot in that program, in the courses that are recorded, about ways to respond. Some of that's yoga, some of that's deep breathing, some of that's, you know, this mindset transition. So check that out on our website if you're interested. But certainly we also have health coaches and teams that can help you. Nicole is one of them. And actually Mari, I believe, is one of them as well, our health coaches. They're here to help you work through this and be able to like come out on the other end. And a lot of what our health coaches do is not tell you what to do. Like a clinician might make a recommendation. The health coach is really here to say, okay, what's going on, and ask you questions to get you to make the conclusion yourself and figure out for yourself like what it is that you need to do. Sometimes you just need that other person asking questions, listening to you, sort of helping you peel back the layers of the onion, or whatever we say, but it can be really important to do that. So thanks, ladies, for joining. And you can find us at farmtotable, PharmToTable.life. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.